Hello, and welcome to A Long River in the Wild, a podcast looking at community initiatives, education, and healthcare in rural North Central Pennsylvania. I'm your host, Triana Hibbler. Throughout the series, we sit down with local changemakers to discuss their work in the region in the hopes that we can better understand the complex challenges they face as well as the strengths of these small communities. Today's episode is with Jackie Martin, the superintendent of Keystone Central School District, which serves most of Clinton County and parts of Center and Potter counties. Given the length and breadth of our conversation, we will be releasing it as two parts. For the first part of our conversation, we focus on how Jackie came to work at Keystone Central, then dive into the district's new comprehensive plan, which was written as a collaborative effort with the community. Details of the planning process and more are available on the Keystone Central School District website, links to which I will include in the show notes. As this was recorded over the summer, quite a few of these initiatives have been enacted already, and I look forward to seeing their outcomes over the next few years. So far, the goal of connecting with the community has been apparent in frequent articles published through the Express, as well as a strong social media presence from the school district itself. You can follow them on Facebook or Instagram by searching for Keystone Central School District. Now, on to the show.
I'll just give you a little bit of background. So yeah. I also grew up in this area.
Okay.
I grew up in Loganton.
Yep.
And attended Sugar Valley High School. This was before the charter school was there.
Yeah.
And before all the consolidation.
Yeah.
I also attended Lock Haven University.
Okay.
And I've had multiple jobs in this area. I've worked the summer recreation programs. I worked at the Lock Haven YMCA.
Yeah.
I lifeguarded at the Mill Hall Pool.
Yeah.
So a lot of like local things.
Yeah.
And then when I graduated from college, there was one position open in the state. I was an elementary health and PE, and there was one elementary job open in the state at Pocono Mountain, and that district also needed a gymnastics coach.
Okay.
So I applied there, and the superintendent there was a previous superintendent here.
Huh.
And so my father was also on the school board here when I was growing up and knew there was a lot of connections. And he said, we're hiring, we're growing so fast, we're doing all this hiring. If you know of any good teachers, send them this way.
Yeah.
And so they needed like that gymnastics coach as well. Yeah. So it was just kind of a perfect fit for me. And I spent 15 years there. While I was there, not only was I health and PE, but I wrote curriculum and I was very involved in instruction. And then I became an instructional support teacher.
Okay.
Mentored a lot of student teachers along the way as well.
Yeah.
And then ended up becoming a head teacher, kind of like a quasi-administrator, and then an assistant principal in an elementary school of 1,000 students. So we were dealing with, because of our location, we had a lot of influx from New York and New Jersey, a lot of problems with gangs, things that you don't typically experience in rural settings, but I had a lot of exposure to. A lot of different cultures and understanding things from a more global perspective.
Yeah.
And that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
So an opportunity came up to come back to Central PA was enticing to me because I we had a daughter and I did not want her in the same schools with this kind of, I mean, I was dealing with the Bloods, the Crips, and the Latin Kings, and they were like sitting in the same classrooms. So, an opportunity came up at Penns Valley.
Okay.
Do you know where that is?
Not exactly.
It's just south of Loganton, like over another. So, it actually sits between State College and Lewisburg on Route 45.
Yep.
Mifflinburg's over there, too. Yep. So, but it borders like Tylersville and that end of Sugar Valley. So, anyway, I became a high school assistant principal first, which was then the other side. My career goal was to be a curriculum director. And so I was at Penns Valley for 7 years and became the high school principal. I was in that role for 4 years. I was hired at Penns Valley because I knew curriculum and instruction, and I also knew how to do school improvement plans because I did that in Pocono Mountain.
Yeah.
And so they hired me to change and improve the school, which we did. And then at that point, we were doing pretty well. We were actually beating State College in test scores and so forth. So when an opening came up for curriculum in State College, I had a pretty good reputation on the curriculum instruction school improvement side, and that was my dream job.
Yeah.
So I was a successful candidate in getting that position and then started really turning around State College's test scores, and not that they were in the in the toilet, but yeah. What was happening was you had your high performing students and you had low performing students.
Yeah.
And they were just fine with this gap.
Yeah.
So we were able to close that gap and also demonstrate growth with all students. Lower achieving, higher achieving, everybody was making more than a year's growth in a year based on multiple measures.
Yeah.
So that was my thing, growing all students collaboratively, collaborative work,
yeah.
And that's what I had led there. And I also had an opportunity, and this will play into your theme in some way, or maybe it's a whole other offshoot of a different study, but because the State College School District has more money
yeah.
to develop teachers and develop administrators,
yeah.
I had the opportunity to spend the last 6.5 years with some of the best educators in the world. Yeah. So I'm on a first name basis with the people who are writing the books and doing the research yeah. and literally have selfies with them. And I've been able to have the opportunity to spend that time really growing in those areas.
Yeah.
So I'm trained by the best people in the world, but yet I'm in a system that is moving really slow.
Yeah.
That being said, when I knew what was happening here, I had colleagues and friends here as well. It was really saddening to me.
Yeah.
The budget woes as well as the performance levels and the access, I think, is what struck me the most, is that it's really unfair that colleagues in the State College School District have 3 times as much access to professional learning than the folks yeah. here, because we're in a rural district. And I can say the same for Jersey Shore. So that combined with I started doing homework on the district and figuring out what was really wrong here. Were they things that could be fixed and addressed? And yeah. did I have the skill set and the wherewithal to do so? And yeah. The more that I did my homework over a 6-month period, the more I was intrigued and excited about this opportunity. So I bring with me a wealth of experience and skill sets. And the first thing that I knew was wrong here was the fact that there was no plan.
Yeah.
There was no comprehensive plan. So if you don't have a plan, then how do you know how to align your resources and your efforts?
Yeah.
Which is why you end up getting a task force who's whacking your budget and whacking. Well, somebody says, well, let's just cut athletics.
Yeah.
Okay, well, does anybody understand the research behind why athletics and co-curriculars are so important in making someone career ready? So, yeah, you might not value it, but what is the value overall, and what does the research in the world say?
Yeah.
Like, so nobody puts that piece together. They just start whacking around here.
Yeah.
So the first thing that I knew needed done, and I actually, during my interview process, stated what I just said to you through that entire process, that if I'm the superintendent, here's what I would do upon entry. And listen, learn, read, lead, also lead the comprehensive planning process. So that's what I did, and I think the process we used was really strong mm-hmm. because what, and I'm going to give you this to keep.
Yeah.
But this basically is just a summary of what we ended up doing in that process. Okay. And I facilitated the process, yeah. but this is not Jackie Martin's plan. This yeah. is the district's plan. So the first thing I did was I gathered a group of stakeholders, and I made sure that we had representation from all parts of the county. So there was at least one teacher and one parent from every school in the district at all levels. There were also community members, some retired, that don't have any children in the school. Mm-hmm. We had students on the committee, high school students. We also had school board members from businesses, such as First Quality. We had invited Dominion Energy, but they weren't unable to make it. From somebody from the banking industry, a few other key places, as well as what was the other group I was? Oh, like children and youth also yeah. participated. Some folks from there. So what we did is we took 4 evenings in April for 2.5 hours each night. And I first lined out the process of what we were going to do, how we were going to analyze our current vision, mission, and shared values. Then I was going to share a lot of information with them about the future of education, the future of work, and a lot yeah. of data. We looked at statistics from Department of Labor and Industry, the purpose yeah. of schools, what are we preparing students to do, schools aren't the same as they used to be. And if you think about our kindergarten class, it's a class of 2031.
Yeah.
It's 2032 now with this incoming group. So my point is, we can't just fix Keystone Central to be the schools that we went to. We need to leap the present and get right to the future.
Yeah.
So what does that look like, and what does this community want their schools to look like? Here's the potential. Where do you want to go?
Yeah.
So then we paused on this piece, and we started looking at all those data points. And then after we had all the data points, we used a process to identify our greatest strengths, greatest needs. And then out of that, we came up with these key areas, and we revisited these pieces to see if our strengths and our needs and our mission and vision, everything's aligned. So we revised these.
Yeah.
So what you see here is our new vision, which is preparing citizens for the challenges and opportunities of the future. And while that might seem really cliche, this group felt really, really passionate about the word citizens, because they felt that was the whole purpose of school.
Mm.
And somebody wanted to use the word students, and our students felt like, well, you can be a citizen before you graduate. Like, you know, you just because you're 18 and an adult, we're citizens long before that.
Yeah.
So they didn't want to use the word students. They wanted to use the word citizen. And the challenges and futures of the and opportunities of the future really leads to, what is the future going to look like? What type of things are we going to give students so that they can apply skills to future situations? Mm-hmm. And then, obviously, the mission is really bold and sassy. Lifelong learners. That kind of goes to the growth mindset, which I'm sure you're familiar with Carol Dweck's work. Adaptable and resilient. That was key, because we identified that we have many students who are suffering from mental illnesses, and social and emotional health is an area of concern. We know from three different data points that our students have a higher rate of suicidal ideation and attempt than other schools in the state and the nation. It's scary.
Yeah.
So that's where this adaptable and resiliency comes in. We also are dealing with a lot of children in poverty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Productive is our business world. They're saying, okay, we don't just want citizens, we want productive citizens.
Yeah.
And then the high moral character was something that we wrestled with a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the part I think a lot of schools are not taking the risk to say is, like, we want to produce productive citizens who have high moral character.
Yeah.
So what does that look like? And we decided it wasn't our place to define it. It was our place to provide opportunities for students to develop their own characters and their own identities. And it's up to their families and their own religious beliefs and so forth to determine that for themselves.
Yeah.
So we thought we'd get a little pushback on that, but I've got to tell you, the folks that I've presented this to so far in our community love it.
Yeah, that sounds right for the community that I know, because it is very much about, like, respect for self and other, and, you know, trying to develop pride in the community and doing the right thing. Like, this morning I was driving and someone, like, I saw a turtle on the road and I was able to, like, slow down and, like, avoid it. But then I saw the person going the opposite direction, stopped and got out and picked up the turtle and moved it to the side of the road.
I thought you were going to say they ran over.
No,
it. Okay,
no, they, like, took care of it. They handled the situation. In a very good way. And I think that that's just part of what I see around of, like, you take dishes to your neighbors when they're homebound, and you
that's a have sense the of community. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You grew up in a community too. Everybody knows what you do. It's a small town, you know,
for better or worse. Yeah. They know what you're about.
The easiest thing to get is a reputation. The hardest thing to get rid of is a reputation.
Yeah.
So high moral character is important. These shared values are also what came out of this, and I think you can just read them. I don't have to read them to you.
Yeah.
But basically, we also realized in our data that our test scores are not as high as they should be.
Mm-hmm.
We also know that our curriculum's not aligned. It's very spotty. Everybody kind of does what they want. There's no expectations for it.
Yeah.
And that the instructional strategies that are happening in classrooms are really the same all the time. They're not the high leverage practices that we know through research.
Yeah.
But equitable is huge. So yeah. The equitable access means, you know, I'm guessing if you're, see, just guessing, stereotyping you actually is what I'm doing. I'm saying, okay, yeah. So you went to a small rural school, but you also ended up in med school. Yeah. So I'm guessing you come from a pretty strong family, or at least an educated family who advocated for you.
Yeah, my mom is a teacher. She was raised by a single mother, but she was the first in her family.
So, but you have an advocate at home.
Exactly.
Who's advocating for you.
And believes in me.
And believes in you and is supporting you. Yeah. And so when you were doing your high school schedule and maybe even your college schedules, if you weren't sure about something, you had someone to ask. And if you really didn't care, but your mom looked at it and said, well, why aren't you in the AP level classes or the advanced classes? You need to move into that. So she would pick up the phone, call the guidance counselor, send you in to do that. She's advocating for you.
Yeah.
We have a lot of kids who have no one advocating for them. Yeah. And so we as a school district, in my opinion, we have to be looking for, number one, who are the kids who are gifted and need specially designed instruction? We couldn't just suppress our special ed students and say, don't worry, let's just dumb that down.
Yeah.
And also, what are we doing to advocate for those children of poverty who don't have someone at home saying and pushing them to a higher level because it creates open more doors for them later?
Yeah.
So how do we know our kids to grow our kids, and how are we making sure that every child has equal access to what we're offering?
Yeah.
So those are social issues.
Yeah. it's very... I feel like with education, so much focus is placed on what schools and districts are doing, when it's also what is the home environment like for children, and are they being shuttled every other day between two different households and parents working three jobs or having problems with addiction or whatever.
And so those things are out of our control as a district, but what's in our control? You know, what's in our control to do? Because if we know that that's happening outside, or we can assume that that's happening outside, what are we doing to take care of children when they're in our care?
Yep.
And how are we treating them as if they're our own?
Yeah.
Critical thinking, solution focus, I think you get that. Safe, healthy, and inclusive culture. We had a lot of our survey data showed that there's a huge problem with bullying. And that's a people's perception, but actually Safe Schools report how many incidents are being actually reported and dealt with is very low. So there's a culture here in which, I'm going to say snitches get stitches, okay?
Yeah.
So if this girl's bullying you and I see it, I'm less likely to get involved and just go, oh my God, and then later tell you, I'm really sorry that happened. But I can't just be a bystander. I need to protect you.
Yeah.
And we have not taught our children in this community to do that.
Yeah.
Kids are scared when we go into lockdowns because of the school shooting culture in our nation. And the inclusivity is interesting, too, because one person not feeling safe might not have to do with a bully, but, you know, if I'm different and I'm gay, I'm very not likely to tell you I'm gay if I live in Clinton County or, like, Cumming County.
Yeah.
It's not safe for me.
Yep.
I'm going to open myself up to ridicule. This is not a very accepting community.
Yeah.
So how are we creating a culture in which learning can best occur, that everyone feels safe and included?
Yeah.
And it's healthy emotionally as well as physically.
Yeah.
So that's huge.
Yeah.
But this group of people really recognized that. We had some really awesome conversations around that topic. And what comes out of it, and this won't surprise you, that generations older than me are the hardest to influence that change because of what they grew in versus my level, or, you know, my generation versus your generation, and who is much more accepting. But if we're not talking about that issue in this comprehensive plan, we're not really being true to the process. Yeah. Engaged and empowered communities and families. This district, as you said, you know, has had some negative things going on, and people don't trust the district, and we need to make the families feel like they're part of the district. And what they were telling us is they kind of felt like the district was like this. No, we'll do the school. You do. We need to be partners in education. And then the last part is really stems out of me saying to everyone, our fundamental purpose of schooling is learning. My fundamental purpose as a superintendent is learning. So I say to myself every day, what are you doing today that makes learning the fundamental purpose? And what am I doing every day to remove obstacles that keep learning from being our fundamental purpose? And so I've impressed that upon my folks regularly, and they're probably sick of hearing it. But this bottom thing says, you know, we need to value looking at every policy and procedure we have and not just saying we're going to keep doing it because we've always done it, but mm-hmm. is this working for us? And
yeah.
one example is in our middle school, the students would come at 7:20, 7:30. The teacher's day didn't start till 7:50. So the kids got off the buses, herded into the auditorium. They were mm-hmm. basically babysat. There was no learning occurring.
Yeah.
And we were paying people to watch them. So then at 7:50, 7:55, they get to go to their homerooms, whatever. So how much problems do you think are brewing in the auditorium, yeah. first of all, that are going to take away from learning the rest of the day? And then at the end of the day, the kids get on the bus at 3:15, the teachers are done at like 3:40. So there's yeah. like this 20. So what we did is we aligned the schedules. Seems really simple, right?
Yeah.
But that's a practice that we've been doing that doesn't promote learning. It's an yeah. obstacle to learning. So we also changed the bell schedule, increased the number of instructional minutes, and decreased the amount of time kids are in the hallway. That's...
Yeah.
That fits all of these things in that decision making. So all of our decisions should be guided by these values.
Yeah.
And then I feel like I'm being really long-winded. Did you have any questions about that stuff?
No.
Okay.
Not at all. I'm glad.
I actually want to show you something while you're okay. here. So what's next to you? It's actually the papers that we use in this process. So we had over 40 people, as I mentioned. And this is not my plan, and this is the process we use. We did a lot of table group discussion, analyzing the mm-hmm. data, and then table groups reported out.
Yeah.
So every individual had a voice in what was happening, and then summarizing those pieces. And then we took all those eight, I think there were eight table groups, and then we pulled pieces together from all those groups. And then, like, for the mission statement, we put those things together.
Yeah.
And then I put them on a paper, and then we all came back together as a big group. These were out in the long hallway.
Mm-hmm.
Then people got so many stickers. So you got to put your sticker by like your favorite, I'm going to say maybe yeah. your favorite three. So you might have liked more than one, but you got to yeah. choose like three different ones. And so what happens is if you stand back and you look at these from a distance, you go, okay, well, you know, a couple people like the first one and a couple like the second one.
Yeah.
Was there any, the people that picked that, does anybody want to yeah. talk to what they liked about that, that, you know, really drew them to it? And I just facilitated the conversation. And then we kind of looked, okay, well, let's look where the dots are. And then it was just kind of a process of elimination.
Yeah.
And then getting down, and then we got down to like these three, and we decided, well, what's similar about those three that we yeah. want to keep for sure, and so forth. And so our mission ended up closest to this one, I want to say.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Here's lifelong learners, responsible citizens, global society. Yeah. Here's citizens again, adaptable, yeah. resilient, productive. People really like yeah. those pieces.
Yeah. And a lot of them are very forward-looking.
Yeah. Yes.
Too.
So yeah. that was the process we used. And so yeah. we did the same for the values. They could pick more for values. That was a vision. And you can see there. I picked these not only what came from the group, but also from research-based.
Yeah,
what are successful schools? So my little secret in this process is this: it's kind of like going to a really good restaurant. It doesn't matter what you order, from appetizers, main meal, or dessert, you're gonna have something good.
Yeah.
So we were bound to come out with a good product, but it was what people chose.
Yeah.
So this process, and you're probably aware of this through your classes, this is a process of building consensus, and that's why yeah. we use the strategy to get consensus and also yeah. everyone's voice there.
Yeah. It also reminds me a little bit of, like, root cause analysis discussions.
Yes, absolutely.
Where
that's
it's
exactly
like,
what it is.
Okay, this is a problem that we're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
What is causing it?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times it's just foundational practices.
You're exactly right. And so... then the next thing, based on what we're measured by, what ESSA, which is federal and state regulations, and what our data said, this group prioritized five goals to accomplish over the next 5 years. And so they actually ordered them in this way of priority, but they're really all important.
Yeah.
So the first was a safe and supportive learning environment. And so I'm in the process of trying to determine how are we going to actually measure these goals. What's our baseline? It may be survey data. It may be attendance data. It may be pay-as-you survey data. So I'm in the process of kind of drilling these down to measurable benchmarks. But the first one, I believe I'm going to end up using survey data because we have baseline data from parents in the spring on whether they feel safe at school, and also like there was a question similar for parents. So we should be able to put some actions into place and then measure annually if we're improving in that area.
Yeah.
The second one is huge for the mental wellness I was talking to you about. The idea is to make sure that everyone has access. So we want to talk about doing a universal screening that captures high-risk kiddos, and then determining if you're a high-risk, if you come up high-risk on this, are you already connected to services? Is there anything else we need to do we're not doing? And not that we're providing it, but...
Yeah.
And then along that line, in Clinton County, there's very little mental health help.
Yeah.
So I had a meeting this past week with the... Or actually this week, with the commissioners... about trying to, how are you using your county dollars? Like they're running a homework club. I'm like, why are you running the homework club? I'm like, let us run the homework club. You know what you could do for us? Could you get us mental health, like crisis, mobile crisis unit that if, when we do have kids melting down, that we don't have to call the ambulance, that we can call Can Help. They can do a train people doing an evaluation. Yeah. They can get them. There's no partial programs here. There's no residential treatment facilities here.
Yeah.
And that's a problem.
Yeah.
We're spending over $2 million a year sending kids to outside placements. And the money's flowing right out of the county.
Yeah.
So access, getting them kids closer, transitioning them in sooner, things like that is what we're looking to get the access closer. But I'm not quite sure how we're going to measure that other than if we're identifying and connecting kids up with services. Then the growth and achievement of every student, this is kind of back to that growth thing I talked about. We want to grow every student at least a year, and kids who are underperforming a year and a half, so we're closing that gap. We'll measure that through standardized tests and other curriculum-based assessments when we get them in place. And then the relationships with the families and the communities. I think, again, this is going to come out in that survey form, but also, that should say number instead of percentage.
Okay.
The number of partnerships with local organizations. So we're doing with our career-based program, our career and technical center, diversified occupations. So if you... would be a student in high school who has an aspiration for a medical field, that you could actually your senior year go out and work in the medical field, paid or unpaid, things like that. And so we went to an economic partnership meeting last night with 300 people, and we got probably 25 business cards of people who are interested in potentially hosting a student for this school year. So we're going to probably that's really easy to measure, baseline number of partnerships and increased partnerships. And then communication has just been awful. So trying to improve internal communications, external communications, and then again, this will be measured through that survey, parent-student survey. And I'm trying to pump out more information as I have it so people don't just make up their own stories.
Yeah.
And those, I think if people feel better about this school district and they feel more supportive, I think it's going to support kids. And overall, economically, for the county, being so rural, if we're offering a better product than other places, then they're more likely to choose us.
Yep.
And the more people who are choosing us, the more money flows in, and it just helps a better economy.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to, as I said, be really cutting edge.
Yeah.
And be the school of choice at a really fair economic price. And so we also implemented a new elementary STEM program for this upcoming school year. So our kids are going to learn coding and robotics as early as kindergarten.
Yeah.
And then it'll flow right into technology education and STEM fields and so forth.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I was going to ask a little bit about like future trajectories, how you see the local economy changing, because it's been manufacturing for so long and just as a like global economy, we are moving more towards like knowledge-based systems. So how do you prepare for that?
So what we have to do in our educational curriculum is we have to stop teaching people to memorize facts and figures. Yeah. We have to teach people processes, and we have to teach to understandings. Yep. Okay, so history classes, social studies classes should not be about memorizing dead white men and dates. They really need to be more about social justice issues, or teach the understanding when you, maybe you're using a time in history, such as American history and World War II, and you're studying the fact that, oh, wow, what's the effect of war on a country economically, politically, you know, and so forth through different lenses.
Yeah.
And so what we should be doing is looking at history through those different lenses.
Yeah.
And then saying, having an assignment that requires students to think and say, okay, if I know this happens, what was the precursor? What was the aftermath of the war? What impact did it have on families and the, just like the psychology and the sociology?
Yeah.
So you're, and then in the future, what does war look like in the future? What does are the impacts the same economically, socially, politically?
And motivations.
Yeah. So so what is that? Because the idea is that you would want to apply what you learn to a new situation independently.
Yeah.
So take math. You don't just do math to do math and then go, okay, I showed you, now you do it. Because you have to be able to understand, when do I use a certain type of math to solve a problem? And then two things, like I'm all about the STEM thing. I'm really into into that because I think that people need to understand, like, science is your natural world, but engineering is your man-made world. And engineers use math and science to solve problems in the man-made world for you to function. But people don't understand the difference between those things. So, and then the other piece on the kind of the literacy and the communications is the communications. How am I going to not only solve this problem, but then how am I going to communicate that for a greater good? And how am I going to use communication skills to solve problems in the first place? So it's kind of like it goes hand in hand, and we need to have expectations and courses that are focused on that type of learning as opposed to the traditional...
Yeah. Regurgitate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's killing us.
Yeah.
The kids aren't motivated. They're not going to be here for that.
It was about a year ago now that we had our med school orientation, and a lot of what they're focusing on at that level is case-based learning, where it's not about memorizing the biochemical pathways, it's about figuring out how to figure things out and work in a team to solve a case, and also look at like why people aren't taking their meds because of not having insurance or things being too expensive or not understanding that just because your blood sugar improves doesn't mean you're cured.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's along the gamut moving towards that. And it's awesome that you're recognizing it and implementing it. And
And we're trying to do that same type of learning for teachers to teach kids.
Yeah.
So we're actually embarking on what I call just kind of a an initiative that's going to allow us to accomplish these things.
Yeah.
And that is professional learning communities, where you basically, if you and I were both third grade teachers, we would have the same planning period together. We would know what the curriculum is, so we would know what do we want our students to learn, how are we going to know when they've learned it, not just traditional tests, but through activities and projects, and how are we going to make it relevant and applicable.
Yeah.
And then what are we going to do, or how are we going to respond when some kids already know this and they're bored, right? And then how are we going to respond if some kids don't know this yet? Well, if we put our heads together, or we work together and say, you know what, you've done a really great job with that piece and your kids are more successful. Why don't you do the reteach on that? And I'll pull this other group and do you know, a different activity at the same time.
Yeah.
And we can mix them because they're our kids.
Yeah.
And so that's the concept behind it. And it's really different from teachers who are used to going in their classroom, shutting their door and doing whatever the hell they want.
Yeah.
So we're trying to show them the power of collaboration.
Yep.
And kind of brings me back to General Stanley McChrystal wrote a book called The Team of Teams, and he was in the Iraq War and realized that fighting the enemy the way we always fought the enemy was not working because it was just a more complex organization.
Yeah.
And so he realized that it wasn't a linear type of protocols in the army. It needed to be more three-dimensional.
Yeah.
And I think that school districts, even though they're institutional across the Commonwealth, they're also very complex organizations.
Yeah.
So we need to build supports and structure, have high expectations and high support for everybody involved in that organization. So we're going to use a team of teams approach. I team with the school board, I have an administrative team, we have school teams, and we have teacher teams within schools. Yeah. And so that complexity is what's going to allow us to actually accomplish the goals that we're focusing on.
Yeah.
So somebody might say, we need to have some kind of a magnet space center school. Okay, well, that's really great, but in the first 5 years, we need to, we've identified the people in this community, this is what they want.
Yeah.
So it's kind of fun, it's exciting, and I am really passionate about my work.
Yeah.
And so I'm interested in how this year rolls out, because we've chunked some goals to address some of these different things, and my biggest challenge is trying to decide what do I have the capacity to get done in 1 year.
Yeah.
And this concludes our conversation with Jackie Martin. Thanks so much for joining us today. Please subscribe for future episodes and find us on Facebook at Along a River in the Wilds or on Instagram at River in the Wilds. Feel free to message us with any questions or comments. For more podcasts like this, check out Rural Matters, The Homecomers, or any of the Strong Town Network shows, including Strong Towns, It's the Little Things, or Upzoned. I would like to thank the Jefferson Humanities Department and Scholarly Inquiry Track, including Megan Bowler, for supporting this work creatively, as well as my advisors, Dr. Rabinowitz and Dr. Motley. All views expressed in this show are my own and do not represent my university or any other organization.